me out of here, Donald, please.
Hello and welcome to episode 126 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Krista Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
So, this week we have one big fat Suicide Squad for you. The first half of this podcast is going to be our spoiler-free review of the movie, and then we are going to jump into spoilers. Don't worry, we will give you a fair warning so you know when to tune out if you don't want to hear spoilers for the movie. But first, non-spoilers. And, Christy, you are going to host.
Yeah, so here is the plot synopsis for Suicide Squad. A secret government agency recruits imprisoned supervillains to execute dangerous black ops missions in exchange for clemency. That is a very dry, though accurate, description. So this is written and directed by David Ayer, who is best known for doing End of Watch and...
Fury.
Thank you. I, like, totally blanked on that.
Sabotage.
David Ayer, yeah, also Sabotage, which... I admit I didn't see. David Ayer is basically known for doing very gritty drama that's kind of very rooted in reality and, you know, very macho and very wah. And so when he was picked for Suicide Squad, a lot of people were like, how does that translate? I don't know. But yeah, when he was picked for Suicide Squad, a lot of us were kind of like, oh, he's a great filmmaker, but what? Because Suicide Squad was kind of seen to be like a more darkly comic thing. And not so much, you know, gritty Batman nonsense. But then they came out with that first trailer and we're like, oh, it's dark comedy, I guess. But then there were news of reshoots where it was like maybe they're fine-tuning and now the story is coming out more and more that maybe the studio was like, no, we definitely need this to be lighter because people were not into super dark, gritty Batman v Superman. So we get this Suicide Squad. Now, I like this movie. I thought that the characters were really fun. I think the world was interesting. I liked the riffing it did within the DC universe. And if DC is going to continue to try to be, I don't know, a little bit envelope pushing in this way, a little bit more spirited, a little bit more attitude, I like that idea. But this is also a movie with enormous problems. I'll let somebody else begin on that.
I want to talk about the problems because I actually like the movie more than not, but it has so many problems. One of the biggest problems I had with this movie, I don't think this is a spoiler, but basically, you know, there's a first act, then there's a non-existent second act, and then a third act that is the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, it's bizarrely structured, and it just kind of feels like there's a lot of holes. It's really sloppy. It all takes place really quickly, but like, and characters kind of explain their relationships to each other rather than letting them grow organically. So it's full of a lot of problems like that. That said, I mean, the reason that I still came away feeling like, oh my God, I had so much fun is because like some of the characters in this are really, really good. Like Harley Quinn is the obvious standout. She's played by Margot Robbie, who, you know, no surprise that she's great. And the way her character is portrayed is a little bit inconsistent. It seemed like David Ayer didn't really know what to make of her, but Robbie's performance is always on point, so she is spectacular. Viola Davis, oh my God, she is terrifying, and I love her. And Will Smith kind of mixes it up with, he plays Deadshot, who's a villain, which is, you know, it's a change of pace from the kind of stuff that we usually know him for. So, yeah, but he gives a really good charismatic performance. It's the kind of character that could come across as kind of flat on the page, but I thought was really fun here.
Yeah. So, you could probably already tell, I didn't like the movie as much as Christy and Angie did. And I think a big part of my negativity stems from the fact that I was really excited about this movie. Basically, the conclusion of this summer is, if it was one of my most anticipated movies of the summer, I was grossly disappointed.
Except for Secret Life of Pets. That was a win.
Yeah.
Never forget
yeah,
that.
No, that... That's fair. That is keeping a semi-smile on my face at this point, but I'm really disappointed by Suicide Squad. I don't think it's the worst movie ever, and I think there are some elements that are signs that they had some good ideas and interesting intentions, and they were on the right path in some respects, but I can't really make any excuses for how sloppy this whole thing is.
It's very sloppy. No, I even
yeah, I'm not gonna argue with you that it's sloppy.
I think the film industry, especially in regards to Suicide Squad, needs to retire the phrase hot mess, because I've heard so many people toss those words around as an excuse to be like, oh, Suicide Squad isn't a good film, but it's a hot mess, so it's fun enough. But that's my big problem with this movie is, you know, I didn't expect an A+ script that had fully developed characters and was going to blow my mind in that respect, but I did expect to have some fun, and I didn't really have any fun at all. I mean, you could see the effect that the trailer had all over this movie, specifically with those music cues, where those music cues...
They're really aggressive.
I love the music that was in this movie.
You're totally supposed to. They basically... I would love to know the budget just for the music licensing, because it's basically like any track that people have been super into the past 20 years makes an appearance. And I'm not going to lie, I was into it.
I want that soundtrack. I want to own it. And I wanted those songs to have the same effect that they do in the marketing campaign, which is, you know, to get you hyped and get the energy pumping and to get your adrenaline pumping. In this movie, they are used in such a heavy-handed fashion that it immediately takes you out of the movie. And there's so many of them, it just doesn't stop from start to finish.
No, that's totally true. In the intro, it's like they introduce Deadshot, Harley, and I think like Killer Croc right away, and each one of them gets a different music cue, and it's just, it's really, it feels a little bit like editing 101. You're like, yeah, everybody's gonna get a super awesome song and get everybody psyched.
It's a movie that almost has no scene transitions whatsoever, and I found that a lot of the times they relied on a music cue to get them from one moment to the next, because those moments just didn't connect in any respect.
It does feel like the music is used as a crutch sometimes, and the thing is, the soundtrack is fun. It's also the most obvious soundtrack that you could possibly come up with for this movie.
Like when they're gearing up for war and they play Seven Nations Army.
They play that. They play, obviously, they play Sympathy for the Devil, because get it, guys?
Oh, but when Amanda Waller is introduced, which I did appreciate, because she goes badass. Like, Viola Davis,
like,
I forever.
Necessarily bad choices, but it is definitely, like, I kind of agree, Perry, in that sometimes they took me out of the movie, because they're so obvious and so, like, you know, popular, and so, like, their music, it's all songs that I know so well that, like, it would temporarily kind of snap me out of it.
Viola Davis was one of my favorite parts of the movie, though. Even though I think that character was a little thin, and I found some of her decisions throughout the movie a little questionable, she's someone that did so much with that character without relying on what she would have needed from a script. Whereas, you know, I think the performances are probably the best thing about this movie, because you could tell everyone's giving it 100%, and there's just nowhere for certain actors in this movie to go because they're not well written enough.
Also, they don't get a lot of screen time. Like, aside from like three members of the Suicide Squad, the rest of them are also just kind of there sometimes.
Viola Davis, though, is someone who transcends the script issues and still makes enough of an impression with her character. Will Smith was fine to me, but, and I liked him. I found him very charming in this role. It's just, it felt like Will Smith dressed as Deadshot, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things is something that I wouldn't be complaining so much about, is if the movie overall was more fun and I could have had more fun with that. But that kind of just...
I thought of Harley.
Okay. Yeah, I have a lot to say about Harley Quinn.
I'm nervous. Go on.
In the non-spoiler section, it pretty much comes down to the fact that I admire Margot Robbie for giving it her all. And you can really see that she tried to go the extra step and just lose herself in this role. So I give her a lot of credit for that. This movie, and especially the editing of this movie, does her no favors whatsoever. One of the biggest problems with Harley Quinn for me in this movie is the fact that the movie gives her almost all of the one-liners and all of the not all of them, but many of the comedic moments in the movie.
It's her and Boomerang, really, that get all the comedy.
So many of her lines... One, weren't very funny in the context of the full feature. They work in the trailer, they don't work in the full feature. And on top of that, what made them even more painful to watch was that she would deliver a line, it wouldn't be funny, and then the movie would give you like 5 seconds of dead air to be like, oh shit, that really wasn't funny. So then I would feel even worse for her.
Oh wow, see, Angie and I are cackling basically at everything Harley said.
Overall, my issue though, the problem with the comedy in this movie though is I'm not going to claim to know what they did in reshoots and what they added after the fact, but certain lines of dialogue in this movie felt very out of place. Like, they decided, oh, we needed more comedy, so let's give Killer Croc more lines, more one-liners, things like that. Things that felt very inorganic and, again, were not funny and maybe could have been funnier if the editing was a little better. But just like the story structure, the editing isn't great either.
I agree the story is sloppy. I agree the editing is a mess. I actually did think it was really funny, but I think...
Sorry.
I also think No, that's fine. It's fine. I just, but yeah, I think for me, the other thing that we can get into in spoilers is the plot makes no goddamn sense. Just none.
We could talk about that in spoilers, but before we go into spoilers, I want to bring up something else real quick that we can, that we should discuss on both sides, and that is the Joker. Jared Leto's Joker.
Okay, so just in case you're listening to this and you don't know all the background on this, Jared Leto has been talking for goddamn ages at this point about how method he got and how he was referred to the Joker on set and how he sent weird gonzo gifts to his castmates, including a dead pig, a live rat, used condoms, and bullets to Viola Davis. What? So we've heard all these crazy stories, and I'll be honest, all that shit was making me dread this movie because I thought his look as the Joker was stupid. I thought these stories were grotesque. And I thought, like, if this is what they're using to promote this movie, what kind of douchebaggery is this movie going to be about? So, with all that in mind, what did we think of the Joker?
It's such a disappointing performance. Honestly, like, the thing is, if I didn't know all this going in, I'd just be like, I mean, I guess it was fine. But, like, especially after seeing all this, like, it goes from, I guess it was fine, to, like, seriously? You did all that. You basically tormented your co-stars for this. Like, this is the best you could come up with after all that. And he's barely in it. I know that that sounds like one of those, like, the food was so bad and there was so little of it things. But it's also, it's just so baffling to me how much of the campaign is focused on the Joker when he has so little to do with anything. And
yeah, he's very disconnected from the Suicide Squad. He deals with Harley, and I honestly don't think he shares a scene with any of the other Suicide Squad members. Which, so the fact that he sent them weird sort of threatening gifts is just... why?
I mean, it's possible that they had shot some scenes that were cut out. Like, I don't know if maybe his role was supposed to be bigger or at some point or what. But just, like, even leaving aside all that, like, madness, his performance just isn't, like, it's nothing special. It's fine. But especially...
it's not scary. It's not scary.
You know what's fucking scary? Viola Davis is terrifying as Amanda Waller. She's like, she looks like a completely normal person. Like, she looks like
She looks like if she could shoot you in the face and not blink. That's what she looks like.
Yes. And it's Joker amazing. Looks like he would make a really long speech about it, at which point, like, you would be able to, like, struggle and get away. He looks like he's the villain that makes the villain speech, right?
Yeah, I feel like monologues. We would have gotten more from his performance if the character was better woven into the rest of the story and served more of a purpose in the grand scheme of things. I mean, what's going on in this movie in relation to the main plot of this movie in relation to the Joker is just, like, not connected really whatsoever. I also had a major problem with just, like, the look and the physicality of the Joker. To me, every time he showed his teeth, I saw a mouthful of braces and not really that scary grill or whatever. Look.
He looked like douchebag Instagram. I was like, in my review for Comic Book Resources, I compared him to a C-list celebrity. It looked like everything he did was for the clicks. It just looked like he was trying to get attention. And it doesn't make him scary. It makes him so fucking annoying.
Something about his posture and the way he carried the character, too, made him seem like a skinny little boy to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it just, it's like, not only was the performance not scary, but then when you tack on the look of the character, it didn't really work for me at all. And yeah.
When that first image came out of the Joker, where they showed him with the stupid tattoos and the slick back green hair, my husband's comment was, that doesn't look like the Joker. That looks like the douchebag that sells you tacos or vegan tacos off the back of his bicycle in Williamsburg. And I can't get that out of my head. That's exactly it. Like, he just looks like a non-threatening hipster. I'm not afraid. I'm not freaked out. I'm not menaced. I'm not going home at night being like, wow, that was so amazing. And, like, what sucks is, like, Heath Ledger, like, got attention for this. Jared Leto is already an Oscar winner, and this is the weak sauce he brought to the table after torturing his castmates? Like, boo.
Well, we should probably move into spoilers about now, but before we do, I want to add one more thing that should probably be mentioned in the non-spoiler section. I just want to touch on David Ayer's work as a director, and I'll just keep it really brief for now, but I didn't really see much authorial expressivity from him in this, which was very disappointing to me, because I know he's really great at capturing gritty action, and this to me, I mean, most of the action scenes just didn't do it for me. I had a really hard time understanding the geography of certain fight sequences, and there was like no style or flavor that felt like anything more than, you know, pop colors and what we had seen in the trailer.
Yeah, there's no memorable action in this movie for me. nothing stood out really.
This is a good segue because I want to talk about the action, but I more specifically want to talk about things involving the actual plot and the finale and stuff like that. So let's move into spoilers.
Before we jump into spoilers, I feel like you get a good vibe for Angie and I like this. No, I'm just saying that if you're tuning out now because you don't want to deal with spoilers, Angie and I liked it, Perry did not. But I highly recommend that you join us once you've seen the movie and dig into our spoiler section.
I did not like it, but one thing I want to mention is that I am willingly going to see it again this weekend because I want to.
Like it? Or you want to see it again?
It's so hard to explain.
Okay, we'll revisit this at the end, because I know Angie's, like, bite-chomping at the bit to the spoilers. So, spoilers. You are not allowed to yell at us after this point for talking about spoilers.
I don't have a ton to say, but I do feel like there's a few things that we can't really discuss unless we go into spoilers. So I'm sorry to rush you guys. But one of them is, so the villain of this movie is Enchantress, but more specifically her and her brother that is there for no reason and that we never get to
know.
And
their glob machine?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if they know what machine means.
I don't know. But, like, I mean, so then the whole... So, basically, the structure of this movie, like I kind of tried to mention in the before spoilers, is, like, it's 10 minutes of exposition followed by 100 minutes of climax. Like, I remember watching the trailers and being like, wow, seems like they're always in the same place in the trailers. And it's like, oh, it's because that's the entire fucking movie. And then it ends with this really, like, just an endless climax, like an endless battle scene where they're fighting Enchantress. But, guys, did it seem to you like they just, like, Cara Delevingne just wasn't even on set the same day as the rest of the actors when they shot the final battle scene?
Yeah, totally. I could not handle the Enchantress dance. Every time she started, like, shimmying and swaying or whatever the hell she was doing, I was just giggling.
You know, it's funny because I didn't think of it as a dance until Monica Costello tweeted a GIF from Metropolis, and she was like, exclusive footage of the Suicide Squad villain. And I was like, it's actually dead accurate. That's actually very funny.
Yeah, I was really disappointed in Enchantress. And I also don't know if I'm very sold on Cara Delevingne as an actress just yet. I mean, I'll give her the excuse that there wasn't much acting required from this role.
Literally 90% of her, like, her job on this movie is, like, writhing in front of a green screen.
And speaking nonsense.
Yeah. Well, she's either dancing with green screen CG nonsense around her, or she's just, like, in hysterics and crying for Joel Kinnaman to save her as
Jun. Oh my
Jun.
God. I keep forgetting Joel Kinnaman is in this movie.
But I kind of feel like the Enchantress and... So, Joel Kinnaman and Enchantress is a good example of what this movie does, which is that it sets up, like, it just sets up, like, really...
It's like, they're in love, moving on.
That Amanda Waller has manipulated him so that he'll be in love with her, and now they're in love. And then, like, And so you see them, like, make out a couple times in a hotel room, and then at the end of the movie, Joel Kinnaman is all like, she's the only woman I've ever cared about. And I was like, because you banged her a couple times in a hotel? Like, the whole movie is full of stuff like that. Like, at the end, the squad members start, like, declaring how devoted they are to each other. Like, oh, this is, like, we're a family. And I'm like, you guys met, like, 24 hours ago. Like, I almost buy because the chemistry between the cast is so good, but it doesn't make any sense. And the movie is just, as much as I enjoyed it, it's full of stuff like that.
That was another problem that I had with Harley Quinn, is that I found her so impossible to track. And I understand that she's psychotic and she isn't a clear-cut character that you could see transform over the course of the movie. But at the same time, that's kind of what makes the role so special and so challenging, is to be able to, you know, exude chaos and that element of the character, but also having some sort of a concrete journey. Because it's like when she you know, joins forces with them again at the end, I was like, all right. Because that had to happen, you know? It didn't mean anything to me.
Well, Angie and I were talking before, too, that Harley Quinn is a tricky character to begin with, because she is... There's something about her that screams freedom, and that she is so nuts and uninhibited that she can do whatever she wants. But then at the same time, she's in this very abusive relationship with Joker, which, kind of in every incarnation that I'm aware of, it's an abusive relationship. And the movie tries to kind of have it both ways, and it doesn't totally work, because it gives her moments where she gets to choose the Joker, or she gets to choose her actions, but then also they included a scene where the Joker, against her will, fried her brain. So then you have to wonder, like, is anything she did really her choice at that point? I'm torn on that. It's a bummer. I wish, honestly, that they didn't have the frying her brain scene, because I get that it makes her super crazy. But it also felt like it robs her of her agency in a way that's kind of disappointing. Like, if they had just allowed her to throw herself into the vat, I could have bought that that made her crazy. That would have been, like, a choice she made, as opposed to a choice she made after Joker already fried her cortex.
Yeah, I feel like the movie is, it's full, it, as much as I like the characters because of the performances, like, the characters themselves don't really have, there's, like, not that much to hang on to. Like, I feel like Deadshot is the most consistent. Amanda Waller is consistent, but kind of two-dimensional. But, you know, Viola Davis is so fun.
I found Diablo to be one of the most consistent of the bunch. That was probably the character that resonated most with me, because I could very clearly see what happened to him, why he is the way he is now, and why he makes certain decisions throughout the movie.
But also, they gave you the backstory for him so late in the movie that he's just nothing, 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 and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I see, you have another, a super tragic backstory.
That's another reason why, like, it's not superficial that the structure is so fucked. Like, so much of this movie would make more sense if we had had, like, a few minutes in the middle to kind of, like, catch our breath and, like, see how people interact with each other before throwing them into this crazy situation where now they're all best friends and families and have tragic backstories they need to reckon with.
I'm astonished that I feel like what the obvious thing to do with this movie was to be like, set up the team, have them go on like a first easy mission, and then they like kind of have some downtime where they talk and whatever, which would be what is the bar scene in this, and then they get sent on the big scary mission. But instead of this, it's like they get sent on one mission that is the rest of the movie. And so yeah, when at the end all of a sudden they have super tight feelings for each other, you're like, you guys have only been fighting for like a couple of hours, and like now you're all like squad forever, and I'm like, wait, what? And so like it feels like a cheat, and that is upsetting. But I honestly, it's not a good movie, and I'm not gonna say it's a good movie. Like, even in my review, which is mixed to positive, I'm like, no, this is a mess of a movie, but I had more fun with it than I was annoyed or frustrated. And honestly, this summer I'll take that.
See, now you sound like me when I was on the Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice review.
Oh, come on. You're just a total DC apologist. We all know it.
I am. You know, I was gonna complain about how much I hated Suicide Squad, and then I realized I was sitting on the yacht that my Warner Brothers bribery money bought me. So then I was like, well, no. But yeah, I guess we should wrap up. So in sum, I mean, I'm not gonna say it's a great movie, like Christy said, like, but... like, I thought it was fun. I'm not going to say go, like, run out and go see it, but I mean, I guess don't expect greatness, but if you just want to see, like, Harley Quinn on screen and stuff like that, then yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, I'm not on board.
Why are you watching it again, Perry?
Yeah, no, that's the thing that I'm kind of struggling with, because I really wanted this movie to be what I wanted it to be.
Are you in an abusive relationship with Suicide Squad? Is this a weird Harley Joker thing? Did it fry your brain?
I'll tell you, my experience sitting there and watching the movie for the first time, it was just so, so frustrating, because as things kept happening that I wasn't liking, there was just this endless battle in my brain where it's like, oh, I want to like it, but this is so stupid, I can't ignore it. I want to like it. And when I walked out of the movie, I was just so upset. And I'm like, oh, you know, maybe if I see it again, maybe something will grow on me. Because I will say that the one thing that I think this movie really does have going for it is that even though it doesn't bring these characters to screen the way that they deserve to be, they do have a really interesting group of people here, and a lot of really talented actors in the role. So I really think that there was a lot of potential there. So, and there was just like a lot of potential overall. It's just breaking my heart to see it squandered like this. I'm curious to see what happens when I see it again, because I've been through this before where I've been so disappointed leaving a movie. And the example that comes to mind is The Purge. First time I saw The Purge, it really was not what I wanted it to be, and it was not what I expected. And I walked out almost mad at it for not being what I wanted. But since, I just happened to have watched it for whatever reason a couple more times, and it grew on me to the point where I genuinely enjoy it right now. So I think there are some movies out there where you can see them again, and there's just some sort of like contagious fun aspect of it that eventually catches on. But I will say that at this point in time, if I'm going to predict how I'm going to feel after a second viewing, I don't know if I see that quality in Suicide Squad, but I'm definitely willing to try it out.
Well, I think also about adjusted expectations helps, which I know that the DC fans are really angry at 99% of critics right now because they wrote negative reviews about this movie. But, like, I think of it this way. Look, your expectations have been managed. So now you're going in and you're thinking, there's no way it can be as bad as they say. And you probably won't think it's going to be as bad. You probably won't think it's as bad as they say. And that's fine. That doesn't mean they're wrong. It just means their perspective is different than yours. I came from a different place. I'm basically saying, like, hey, don't threaten people's lives over a goddamn movie. Like, we do this for a living, and none of us have ever gotten so intense about a movie that we've actually, well, that we've earnestly threatened each other's lives. I mean, like, you know, sometimes Angie really has it coming. But we
okay, excuse me. Chappie is sitting right over there.
That's
Stop
true.
It. Stop it.
Christy needs a black
I'm relieved. Every time I like a quote-unquote bad movie, one of you guys does,
I know,
too.
I ruined it this time by liking Suicide Squad.
I know.
This
could have
been
this
yours.
This could have been my thing. But yeah, I like Suicide Squad. I do think I should warn you, remember, it is PG-13, so it's not nearly as, you know, it's not Deadpool, so just keep that in mind. But it does have a unicorn.
And on that note...
Yeah, I think we should wrap this up. So that's it for episode 126 of Popcorn and Prosecco, our Suicide Squad episode. You guys know where to find us. We are on iTunes, where you can subscribe, rate, comment. You can visit our website, popcornprosecco.com. We have our Twitter handle, Popcorn Prosecco. You can like us on Facebook, and then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, do you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. And I'm all over the web. You can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemroff. I write for Collider.com. I am on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. And that's all we got for you. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Seriously, the hell's wrong with you people?
We're bad guys. It's what we do.